This is Steve Kim. Welcome to the AC Podcast. On this podcast, we want to help you understand and speak the language of our culture and address questions being asked with intellectual honesty, gentleness, and respect. Hey everyone, welcome to the Apologetics Canada podcast. Steve Kim here. As I get started today, what I wanted to do is over the next few weeks, I wanted to highlight different apologetics and worldview training ministries. And so I thought, given my proximity here in Alberta, I definitely wanted to highlight this ministry that I'm about to introduce to you. I have on the line with me, all the way from Calgary, Jojo Ruba. Jojo is the executive director of Faith Beyond Belief. Faith Beyond Belief is a Christian worldview and apologetics ministry based out of Calgary, Alberta. Welcome to the show, Jojo.
Hey, glad to be here, Steve.
So can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself? What makes Jojo Ruba tick? To get started, I was wondering, why apologetics? What got you into that?
Right. Well, what makes Jojo Ruba tick? I sometimes ask that question myself someday, you know? I have to be honest. No, I've actually been a public speaker and a worker for quite a bit now. I'm just looking through my years. I started actually when I was recruited as a student in Ottawa by a man named Scott Klusendorf. Scott actually was on staff with Stand to Reason at the time with Greg Kokel and his crew. And he challenged me at that time when we brought him down to do a debate on abortion. And he said, you know, there's more people working full-time to kill babies than working full-time to save them. And we don't have many professional speakers, apologists in this area who are thoughtful, who are gracious, and we need more of them to come up through the ranks. And that really convicted me. I was studying journalism. I had a master's degree in political science that I was finishing up. And I thought, you know, I'd love to get into these fields, but the need there is great. And Scott's absolutely right. And so I worked and it actually helped establish a national pro-life organization that's still going strong at that time. And I worked there for almost 12 years. And as I was doing that, one of the key things that I did was speak in front of churches, Christian school groups. And as I did so, I realized that I couldn't even get past the discussion on relativism and truth with many of these students. Mm-hmm. So if I wanted to convince them that abortion was wrong, I had to convince them that there was a right and wrong in the first place, which took about, you know, often half the time of my presentations. And so when I moved to Calgary, I actually connected with several people who are huge fans of Stand to Reason and Greg Kokel, and we brought Greg to come and speak at our events. And we had almost 500 people show up at that first event almost, I think, 10 years ago now. And it was very well attended. A lot of people said, we need something that is local. We need something that is an organization that's Canadian. And so I looked at where I was at. The pro-life group I started was still going strong. And I said, you know, I think this is where the need is right now. So I switched over from doing that line of work to doing Christian apologetics and worldview training. And the heart of Faith Beyond Belief is what Jay Warner Wallace, who's often quoted by you guys, I listen to your podcast too, says we need a lot of $1 apologists. And what he means is that we're not valuable, but that we're local, we're on the ground, we're people who are you rub shoulders with every day. And so we created an organization, I think, that is focused on that. And Faith Beyond Belief is about empowering Christians, and this is our motto, in fact, to be effective ambassadors for Christ for everyday conversations. And so our ministry is building into people. We want to have an infrastructure, especially here in Canada, that needs it. It's a big country where we have local representatives of FBB serving us, working with churches, speaking at youth groups, the stuff that we do here, the thing that we do well.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting what you say about how you had to get into relativism and things like that, because in a sense, these are the root problems that we have when we're talking on the issues like abortion. The way we like to talk about it, the way we phrase it is that we try to focus on the primary issues rather than the peripheral issues. Not that the peripheral issues are not important, but we find that there are some fundamental problems when we're talking to our atheist friends or otherwise skeptical neighbors, that they have so many presuppositions to get over before we can even get to the topic of, say, abortion. I mean, we'll talk about abortion and things like that, but we'll try to get to the relativism and religious epistemology and all of that stuff pretty quickly. Whereas what I've seen you guys do is, man, you guys just come out guns blazing. You're not hesitant to address some of these what we call secondary issues very directly and use that as a way to get to these fundamental issues like relativism and so forth. Would you say that that's an accurate description of what you're doing?
I love the complementary nature of what we're doing, because I appreciated what Apologetics Canada did. Actually, even before we started Faith Beyond Belief, I actually attended an Apologetics Canada conference twice, 2 years in a row, down in Vancouver. I actually drove down with some volunteers and friends. And so we said, this is awesome. I would love to really partner with you. And I think that's a good vision in terms of how you lay it out. What we find is when Canadians are talking to their friends at school or at work, maybe they're assigned an assignment at class. I talked to a student just the other day at a local Christian college here who's actually being told to promote a native spiritual organization as part of his assignment for business class. Mm. It's like, how is that even possible that a Christian school would ask me to promote this group that teaches all of this Aboriginal spirituality that isn't compatible with Christianity?
Yeah,
I explained to him exactly what you said, that the issue here is not that we shouldn't be nice to Aboriginal people or that we shouldn't show compassion to people who are looking for work. The issue here is a worldview issue. The issue is that someone doesn't recognize that not all worldviews can be correct. But the topic of Aboriginal spirituality and this specific assignment that he has is the starting point to that discussion. So for us, oftentimes, we don't have a lot of people who are thoughtful, who ask the good questions, who are actually saying, oh, is this actually true? Or what does truth mean? That's a certain subset of society that I think is important. But for the most part, people don't even have a comprehensive worldview. Mm-hmm. So what we find is, especially when I was doing pro-life work, this happened all the time. And you've taken some of the training that we provided for that organization.
Yeah.
We'd go on the streets, we'd start talking about abortion, but eventually we got into all the kinds of worldview topics that we talk about as apologists, right, as Christian apologists. And even though the training that we provided on the pro-life side was not specifically Christian or even religious, most of the conversations ended up being about metaphysical truths, right? Like, what is the value of life? How abstract or how much choice are we allowed to have? Where does the right to choose even come from? Right. So what we find is the direction of conversation for most people starts with the nitty gritty stuff that people struggle with, like same-sex attraction or transgenderism or all these kinds of topics. And then we're able to then bring them back to gospel truth from there. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think has been effective for us.
Yeah, I've certainly benefited greatly from the training that you guys provide. I found it always funny because when I make a case for the humanity of the unborn, I'm using all of these secular arguments, and it is often my friends who are atheists and agnostics, they're the ones that bring religion into it, because they'll often say, oh, your position is just religious. And I'll often point out to them, where in my argument did I invoke God? You did, right? And I found it really interesting that because in general, I think our culture is losing the ability to think clearly. We're just not used to that. Right. And so I think you see something that kind of vaguely smells like religion, or you perceive it as religious, and then you just kind of tack that onto it in a way to kind of dismiss the argument rather than actually engage with it. To switch gears a little bit here, you mentioned transgenderism and same-sex attraction and things like that. You told me that you're doing your doctoral work in this. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, well, I'm in the process of applying, so I shouldn't say it's not accepted yet, but it's actually gone further ahead. There's a school that I'm applying to that I think is excited about my application because it's really practical. And even if I don't get into the program, which it's unlikely, I'm actually going to be writing a book on our behalf as Faith Beyond Belief on Christian apologetics, sexuality, and gender identity. So what I've been finding is there's plenty of great books. Like Robert Gagnon has written a great, powerful theological case for why the Bible has this view on sexuality, and it's not even assailable. Like, it's what we've always believed. Mm-hmm. There's been great testimonies from people like Rosaria Butterfield and Christopher Yuan. I know he spoke at your conference a few years ago. Just great little tidbits. And they're starting, I think, to bring up conversation training, but it's not enough yet. What we find is even when we speak on things like why do we trust the Bible or who is Jesus, during Q&A time, invariably with young people, this is one of the top questions they raise because it's become a huge stumbling block to faith.
Right.
So these young people may be already in the church, but they're in the process of either leaving the church or embracing a liberal Christianity over this issue. And what I tell pastors is, look, this is not about sex. This is about how do you trust the Bible? Is this something that's reliable? So here again, we have an issue that people are struggling with, and then we're able to tie it back into these primary issues, as you call them, because it's practical. And so what I want to be able to do in my research, and I've already started doing this, is to lay out a case for how Christians can be good ambassadors and actually not capitulate on the issue of sexuality, but then turn it as an opportunity to talk about Jesus. And they talk about how good God is. And here's an example. One of the lines that LGBT activists often use is the slogan that says, love is love. Right. All love is the same. Everyone's able to love, right? You know exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Well, what's actually interesting is that, and I love, if I could use that word, C.S. Lewis's book, The Four Loves. And I agree with him. He actually argues there's four different kinds of love that God designed us to have. And these four different loves, and here's the key part, are not interchangeable. So whether it's family love, which is storge love, eros love, which is romantic love, agape love, God love, or philia, which is friendship love, he says all of these loves are essential for human flourishing, but you should never mix them up. That's why you should never be your child's best friend. Every secular psychologist says this. Why? Because you have to love your kid in a different way than her best friend can. In the same way, and I think this is one of the practical things I'm going to argue, God endorses and made us for same-sex intimacy and friendship. Even Jesus had that. And especially in this kind of culture, it's not unheard of, and I think it's very common for men and now women to long for same-sex intimacy. But when the culture tells us, especially little kids, that same-sex intimacy is all about sex, sexual practices, mm-hmm. then that same-sex intimacy that is required between two people of the same sex now becomes eros love instead of philia love. And in doing so, it actually ruins both.
That's really fascinating to me because in my experience too, because I come from an immigrant background. I come from South Korea. And I remember when I came here, one of the things that people here always told us, especially my parents, was please do not touch the kids. Because in Korea, it is very common for your elders to touch you if you're a child, right? Not in an inappropriate way necessarily, but maybe like a pat on the head or like a gentle pat on the bum. Those kinds of things right. are very much part of the culture, and it's accepted, and it's right. not taken to be sexual.
Absolutely.
And I've found that in the West, everything is so oriented around sex.
Well, just yesterday, I think it was 7/7, one of the local news stations reported that, I think it was PBS, had to come out with an announcement that Ernie and Bert are not gay because of
right.
sexual orientations.
Yeah. And I saw this Babylon Bee article that kind of, I mean, it's satire, right? And it
right.
said, VeggieTales writer confirms that Larry and Bob are just accountability partners or something like that. And
Right. Well, you know, here's the thing too, and this is just fascinating once you hear this part of it. The terms heterosexuality and homosexuality were only created less than 150 years ago. In Germany by people trying to advocate that homosexual activity was the same as heterosexual activity. And the historians who are writing this are actually pro-LGBT historians. One of them is actually a gay professor himself. You can look these up. These are books that are called The Invention of Heterosexuality. The other book is called The Short History of Heterosexuality. And if people want to contact us or visit us at our website, faithbeyondbelief.ca, you can contact me. I'll be glad to give you these resources. But what's fascinating, and this is part of the research I found, Steve, is that prior to this time, there was all kinds of ways men showed intimacy with each other. I found this wonderful poem, in fact, was written by a soldier in World War II that he actually took a romantic poem and turned it into a friendship poem for his best friends who were in war with him, who were in the middle of this great conflict. And it was talking about love and compassion, the kind of love that David and Jonathan had.
Right.
But there was no thought at all that it was sexual. In fact, Abraham Lincoln, when he was a student, law student, actually slept in the same bed as his best friend while they were in law school. Why? Because it was cheaper. And how do we know that? Because he actually openly talked about it in his speeches. And the point is, no one blinked or accused him of being any kind of sexual orientation or identity. Why? Because lots of guys were doing that in law school. And there was no fear at that time that what they were doing was sexual, even if it was intimate. When we explain this to kids, it's such a powerful counter narrative to let them know that they can be intimate with their friends and not be sexual.
Right. It's interesting that you bring up C.S. Lewis's four loves and the different kinds of loves, like how in Greek there are different words for love. Actually, in Korean, it's much the same way. We have different words. Yeah. And so there, we use a very particular word to refer to romantic lovers, but then there is a kind of word for love that's a bit more familiar or neighborly affection rather than romantic love. We say jung for that specific kind of love. And then there's this kind of generic word for love, sarang. The English translation typically is love, and that word is used a lot, like the general kind of generic English word for love.
I love pizza, or I love kimchi, or I love video games, right?
Actually, it can't be used in that way. Between persons, you can use the word sarang, but you can't really use that toward an inanimate object. That would just sound weird. But yeah, there are different words in Korean as well.
So I just wanted to ask, because this is great. I'm so glad to hear that. Is there another word then for if you love kimchi? How would you say that in Korean?
There you would just use the word like. They make a in Korean, the difference between liking something and loving something is very clear. It's just the way the semantic range works between those two words.
That's a great example, though, of what we're trying to talk about is kids today have no concept that there's different love needs that we have. Mm-hmm. And they use the same word for I love pizza as I love grandma. In English. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. And here's the other part. Going back to what you talked about earlier, Steve, when I speak about this nature of love, one of the theological themes that comes out, and I just really appreciate this again, is if you look at these four loves, you realize you find their highest form or highest example of these loves in our relationship with Christ, right? Mm-hmm. Jesus is the bridegroom. We're the bride as the church. Jesus is our brother. We call God Father. Jesus calls us friends, right? And obviously, as God being God, we have an intimate relationship with him. And frankly, I think one of the reasons why there is no marriage in heaven is because we'll have such an intimacy with each other and with God when we get there that marriage will just be a reflection of it, like a pale reflection of it. So it comes back to, again, this practical thing that we're dealing with in day-to-day life brings us back to understanding proper theology. That's what I really appreciate of what good apologetics does. It points back to the reality that we live in Christ's world. And that's why we love using the word worldview training rather than apologetics. Apologetics is a great word. We support that too, but a lot of Christians we talk to, and we're talking about Christians, let alone non-Christians, have no idea what that is. They think it's something that Canadians do all the time. You know, we
follow
all the time, right? But when we challenge them with worldview training, this is what we tell them. The world that we live in makes sense because Jesus is the center of the world. And when our worldviews are compatible with how the Bible lays it out, then how we view the world is actually compatible with reality, because that's what reality really is. And so what we try to emphasize for our evangelism methodology is that evangelism, if you think about it, is actually an invitation to people to change a worldview that's focused on themselves to a worldview that's focused on Christ. And that's why for us, the way we approach people may be in one way that's a little different from yours, but it always goes back to that worldview. And we're able to challenge different aspects of that worldview to be able to then get to the heart of the matter. In fact, one of the lines we like to use is, oftentimes, Christian churches or evangelism ministries focus on throwing seeds on the ground. But any good Alberta farmer, right, and I talk about farmers, know that even before you scatter seeds, you have to till the soil.
Right.
So for us, talking about things like abortion or homosexuality or relativism or, you know, pluralism is actually a way for us to till soil so that when we get to the top, the hard issues, the heart issues, we're actually at the right point because now we've removed some of these intellectual barriers that people have. I mean, we've had people tell us that when they go to work, they have coworkers who won't even engage them on spiritual things or even truth things, or they may not even engage them at all because they think as Christians, we hate gays. Mm-hmm. So if we want to get into those conversations with them about spiritual matters, we need to deal with the homosexuality issue first in order to get tell them about Jesus.
Right. I've been saying for a long time now that I guess we live in this microwave culture, right? So our expectations for evangelism is just so, it's just way too high. So, you know, if you have just 5 minutes, pull out John 3:16 and, you know, we expect that person to drop to their knees and, you know, just weep and, in repentance, that sort of thing. But I've found that that comes later, I've found, in my interactions with people. There are just so many things to get through first. I mean, there are times when somebody is just ready. But I found that that person had been in situations where they've either already talked about this or through personal experiences, their hearts are already softened to the gospel. But often, more often than not, I run into people that just need to be convinced first, for example, that their relativism is just false. Exactly. You can't actually live like that. Only then are they open to accepting, just entertain even, the idea that Jesus is the only way.
So, I mean, here's a simple tip. And obviously, if what I'm saying sounds familiar, we borrow a lot from Stand to Reason and Greg Kokel. We're huge fans of his ministry. Mm. But one of the things he says is, simple thing, learn the waitress's name at the restaurants. Right. Get them to know you as a real person. We did this once. My friend and I had a stack of like Christian material on the table. We're having dinner. Woman comes in. Her name was Susan. Mm-hmm. And because we asked, we were able to say, hey, have you ever read a book called The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe? Because one of the main characters, her name is Susan. And she actually had, and she loved the book. Mm. So from that conversation, we were able to say, well, have you ever read another book that C.S. Lewis wrote called Mere Christianity, where he actually makes a case that you should have a religious worldview that's actually reasonable? And she had never read it, but she said, you know, that's a really good idea, having a faith that's reasonable. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, it's like we didn't like share everything about Jesus or the cross or at that point because she's not ready for that. But we got her to at least consider reading Mere Christianity. And we wouldn't have done that if we hadn't learned her name.
Right.
Remember, the other thing Greg Kokel says with that piece of advice is make sure you leave a good tip.
That's right.
Tipper, because mm-hmm. you need them to remember you as well as a person who gave them good advice and treated them well. In fact, that happened in another restaurant where a woman remembered me and my friend from a different restaurant she worked at because we left a good tip and treated her very well. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of fresh air I think Christians can do. And what I find, Steve, is so many times as believers, we have lost confidence in the goodness of the gospel. Mm. And we actually live that out. We don't feel very confident. We don't think our gospel is good. Our culture is telling us that as Christians, you must be stupid or hateful or both for what you believe. But and we actually act that way because we're so dour and sour, right? But we don't have to. And once you understand the power of the Christian story to explain reality, and especially on this issue of sexuality and gender, my argument that I'm making is once you understand the true nature of God's love for us, the last thing you want to do is change it or compromise on it. Mm-hmm. You want to trust the God who is love. And so we can be confident to talk about issues of sexuality and gender, for example, because at the end of the day, what the culture offers is a false view of love. it does not offer what Jesus offers. And that's the mindset that we'd like to be able to give. In fact, that's the heart of our name, right? Faith Beyond Belief is about having a faith that's not just about believing really hard. It's about understanding that we can trust that God is good and God is right.
Mm-hmm. And on that note, there are a number of resources that you offer through Faith Beyond Belief. One of them is the Worldview Training Course. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, one of the things I really admire, and congratulations, I think you just won an award for your thinking series or one of your videos you produced, The Human Project.
One of the videos from The Human Project, yeah.
Excellent. Well, I'm really proud of you guys. That's great. It's good to see a Canadian production doing very well.
Thank you.
And that's something we definitely would support. One of the resources we try to provide, again, our mindset is let's start with the Christians first. Let's equip them to be effective ambassadors because the best way to evangelize this culture is through believers. That's what we've always done as the church. So we don't do a lot of outreach events, traditional outreach events, let me just say it that way, that engage non-believers. Mm-hmm. Rather, we focus a lot on training believers. And so the first thing that we thought of when we came together as a team, as ministry, as volunteers, is we need to get Christians to start thinking like Christians. So we created a 12-week worldview course that talks about what it means to have a Christian worldview. And the key part for us is we want to explain all the presuppositions or assumptions we have. So we start off with what is a worldview, what is truth, and then we talk about two topics on science, on design and evolution. And then at that point, we start talking about God. And then in the sixth session, we talk about the Bible. Mm-hmm. So we don't get to the Bible till halfway through the course. And that's because we want people taking the course to be able to be literate in when they read the Bible. Like it's like teaching someone how to read before you give them a Bible, right? If the culture says that's just true for you or that's just your religion,
right,
when you quote a Bible verse, then we need to be able to understand what truth is before we can say the Bible is true. Right. So our worldview program has been going very well. We've been teaching it several times. I actually have three classes we're teaching this year at homeschooling groups and schools, because what we've been finding has been very effective. And it's, again, at a layperson's level. So we're not doing a lot of the stuff that you guys are doing, which again, we need. I'm not at all diminishing what you're doing, which is a more, you know, university level, philosophy level. We're talking to, you know, tradespeople, plumbers, you know, high school students, and getting them an understanding that the Christian worldview makes sense,
right,
and it's worth believing. And even with, I'm actually getting my youth group to lead themselves this time around using a video series we've created. So you can actually order the videos online as well at faithbeyondbelief.ca, and you can go through it yourself. And what I'm getting them to really think through is, once again, not just Christianity as a religious subculture, which I think a lot of Christians, unfortunately, are Christians because of that. Mm. But Christianity as a worldview, a way of explaining all of reality. And right. I think it's captured their imagination. I can tell you countless times when people hear us speak or take the worldview course, they say things like, no one's ever taught Christianity like this to us before. Why is that?
I was just talking to a teacher friend of mine, and he said that he had to challenge his students' view of salvation, because as far as they were concerned, Christianity was just fire insurance, right? And it's about all about taking your soul to heaven and not to hell. But when he pointed out that as far as scripture is concerned, salvation is total. It's not just your soul. The creation itself is groaning for redemption. So it's not just your soul. It is all of the world, and just that scope, right? Because we tend to take Christianity and just narrow it down to soul saving,
right?
But it's much more than that. It is about creation as a whole. It is about the world. It is about how you look at the world and what this world actually is like.
Yeah, and it ties into the Great Commission in pro-life work, and I use this line a lot now as a Christian apologist as well. In the church, we regularly focus on the Great Commission in Matthew as go and make disciples. But in fact, there's two parts of the Great Commission. Jesus says, go and make disciples, and the verse right afterwards says, teaching them everything I have commanded you, mm-hmm. and lo, I'm with you always. And you know this when you go to church, Steve, and you speak at churches. When we go to churches and speak on all kinds of topics, whether it's on truth or on homosexuality, invariably we learn there's many people in the church who do not have a biblical worldview, mm-hmm. in which case we are not actually fulfilling the Great Commission. If they can't put a simple idea like do not kill babies,
yeah.
That's part of a Christian worldview, right? They separate those two. That's telling me that they're not being taught everything Jesus commanded us, right? So there's a huge problem, I think, in our culture. And the way we look at it is we need to start with the church first, mm-hmm. because we're the ones who have the reasons for hope. We're the ones commanded to be ambassadors for Christ, right? So that's our responsibility. And I think for many churches, we've taken for granted that Christians know their stuff. When in fact, as you know, that's the least likely thing that's happening right now. Most of us have been so kowtowed and shut down that we don't even know how to have spiritual conversations with secular people anymore.
So the worldview training course, how young would you recommend it? Like, so you mentioned high school students.
Yes.
But how old would you say you need to be roughly to start taking the worldview training course?
Well, my youth group's taking it on themselves, and I think the youngest kids are about 13 or 14. And the way we've done it is there's a lot of entertaining bits, so I like to use very varied clips. Mm-hmm. My background, remember, is in journalism and communication. So I don't have the same philosophy and theological training as you guys, which, again, we desperately need in the church. Mm-hmm. But from my training, communication is the key to bring ideas that are necessary, that are often talked at the higher level, so that everybody else can benefit from them. So that's how we see our work. That's how I see my work particularly. And that translation part of things, where we take complicated ideas and make it accessible, is so key. So for young people particularly, I was just speaking at a church camp a few weekends ago, and it was, I think the youngest age was grade 7. And I brought our first two sessions on worldview and truth. And well, at least one of the kids came up to me afterwards, like, you know, that was so helpful. You know, thank you so much. Another young man who's homeschooled, I think he's probably grade 9 or 10, said, I've never thought about evangelism as a worldview change before. That's really given me a different perspective. And if I could just be proud a little bit here of our team. I got an email the other day from a lady who actually heard me speak, I think, 12 years ago or 10 years ago. And she said the presentation I gave changed a lot of how she viewed Christianity. She's now working for another organization and wants me to speak at this new organization because she remembered the talk. Mm. So it I think, and I did worldview with them as well. So I think this has been, for us, evidence of how powerful this kind of training really is, and what Jesus actually embodied, right? He gave us a different perspective of reality. Mm-hmm. He gave us God's perspective, and that's really how we should view the world. So, Steve, if I could just, I know we don't have too much time, but I really like to also mention, because you're going to be part of it, and we're really proud to have you, yeah. Our Be Ready conference. So we started the Be Ready conference after Greg Kokel came, and it's obviously Be Ready is based on 1 Peter 3:15, always be ready to give a good reason for the hope that you have with gentleness and respect. And so we brought in some amazing speakers in the past, like Frank Turek, William Lane Craig, Walt Heyer, if you've never heard him before, is the funniest, yeah. former transgender who's now a strong Christian. He and his wife came. They loved working with us. We still work with them. So that explains a bit of the wide variety of topics we cover. We had Josh and Sean McDowell this year talking about passing on the faith to the next generation. So next year, our theme is called Finding God in Science. And so we have two Christian scientists, not the cult group Christian Science. I have to be careful.
Yeah.
Scientists who are Christians.
So there we go.
One is Dr. Jason Lyle. He's a young earth creationist who's an astrophysicist. And Dr. Fuz Rana, who's a biochemist who works with reasons to believe. He's an old earth creationist. We always love to have that balance. Mm-hmm. And they'll be speaking on things like creation, evolution, design, Big Bang, all those kinds of great science topics. Plus, we'll also bring in other topics like Brett Kunkel. He'll be coming in to speak on youth and young adults. He used to work with Stand to Reason. And I love his story because he brings a whole bunch of youth every year to speak to or to go door-to-door evangelizing the Mormons. The way I see it is it's sort of payback for all the times they visit our house. And then what's great is he comes back with the students at the end of the first day, and they're all wanting to learn apologetics because they all had all these conversations on the Trinity, on why do we believe Jesus is God, why do we trust the Bible. And so they take that training, and then they take that back the next day. So Brett will be speaking on how to reach youth and logic and those kinds of topics. And then our other topic, our speaker, our main speaker, is he's Sam Alberry. He's a pastor.
Ooh, yeah.
Who works at RZIM with Ravi Zacharias, and he actually is a same-sex attracted pastor. And I love his presentation because he says, look, I may not be able to change my sexual attractions, but I can choose my identity. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the day, sexual orientation does not have to define you. And it's a powerful story. So these are our four main speakers around this those basic themes. And then we also have a whole bunch of breakout speakers, including yourself, Steve. So we're actually going to be in Edmonton for the first time next year, and we're really excited to be there. We'll also have a conference in Calgary like we've done. I think this is our seventh or eighth conference now, and it's just been growing ever since. So we're really proud to share that with your audience.
Yeah, I personally am really looking forward to this because there are a lot of names that I've personally wanted to see. So when is the conference happening in Edmonton and Calgary?
Sure. It's March 8th and 9th. We're going to try to do the same weekend thing again, but yeah. Driving the highway too. And it's at West Edmonton Christian Assembly, starting Friday night, March 8th in Edmonton, and then Foothills Alliance Church in Calgary, March 8th and 9th again. And Steve will be in our I'll be there as well. We'll be breakout speakers at the conference on March 9th in Edmonton. So yeah, Steve, why don't you tell people what you're speaking about?
For those listeners that have been listening to the podcast for a while now, you may remember the talk I did a number of years ago on particles and morality. That's the talk that I'll be doing at the Be Ready conference in Edmonton. Basically, the idea is if our world can be reduced down to particles, and if that's all there is, then we can't actually have objective morality. And so that will be the topic that I'll be speaking on.
No, we're really excited to have you there, Stephen. We're glad to be able to partner. I know when you moved to Edmonton, we're like, wow, Apologetics Canada's here. So we're really glad to have reached out to you and to make sure this is an event that you can be part of.
So as we wrap up, Jojo, if our listeners want to learn more about you and your ministry, where can they go? You mentioned your website.
It's faithbeyondbelief.ca, faithbeyondbelief.ca. We're actually also on Facebook and Twitter. So our Facebook page is pretty busy. We try to post two articles a day. And we're actually promoting a podcast on Facebook right now about our view on John MacArthur's social justice and the gospel document. So if you're interested in that topic, visit us there.
I listened to your podcast a few times before, but now I'm starting to binge listen. This is so good. So listeners, you guys have to check this out. Everyday Conversation with Jojo Ruba. You can find that on faithbeyondbelief.ca. You can also subscribe. I think you guys are registered on iTunes too, right?
Yes, you are there as well.
Absolutely. And so make sure you subscribe to it. There are some really good topics that they cover that you'll be interested in. And it's a good kind of a roughly half an hour per episode kind of thing. So it'll be really good for those of you who commute to and from work. So again, thank you so much, Jojo, for your time and for telling us a little bit about yourself and what you guys are doing in Alberta and across the country here. I wish you guys all the success, and I really look forward to continuing to work with you guys in the coming days.
And if I could tell your audience, we're actually going to be interviewing Steve for our podcast in the next couple months or so. So please listen to that as well. You can hear him there.
All right. Thank you for joining us, listeners. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada. And we'll come back next week with more stuff to think about. Until then, ciao.